It's Sunday night, 11 o'clock, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport, the station that serves your community Chinese food and ribs. Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I shoot flamingos in a fruit fight! Every cover of day, whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, on this Sunday night, September 23rd, 2007, to the 239th episode of Dave's Gone By. I can't believe we've done 200, and I can't believe we've done 20 of these things, let alone 239.
You stole my line.
Oh, so, well, thanks. See, I can make fun of the show, Jeff. You have to be more nice about it. I can make fun of my own stuff. But the Jeff I refer to, by the way, is the one and only Jeffrey Goodman, who is a good friend of mine and also our frequent guest co-host on this program.
Maybe not for long.
Well, you travel so much. Maybe, you know, it's part
but
of
I'm always back
him.
For you, Dave.
Yeah. Well, Jeff just came back about 2 weeks ago from a trip to Costa Rica, and we were going to talk about it last week, and we really didn't get much of a chance. So we're hoping to do some of that this week, later on in the program, see if he has a couple of stories to tell about his time in Costa Rica. But we've also got so much other stuff to cover on this episode of Dave's Gone By, including a very special guest, folks who remember TV of the 1980s. Will hopefully also remember the Channel 11 action news team, people like Pat Harper and Steve Bosch, I think, was also there, as well as sportscaster Jerry Gerard, and the weatherman, that gentle, kind of gruff, well, it was a light voice, but it was a woolly sort of a voice, but very recognizable, the very curly, brillowy sort of hair, and the gentle persona of Roberto Tirado. Remember, I'm Roberto Tirado of Action News. It's just a very playful way about him. Well, Jeff doesn't remember him, but I do, and I'll bet bunches of people who are listening remember him, too. Well, Roberto's still been around. He's been active and doing a whole bunch of things, including he's updating a book that he put out a while ago. And he's such an interesting fellow to talk to. I want to thank Lou Talano for turning me on to him, as it were. Lou, also a guest on Dave's Gone By a couple of times. He is the, I think he was a guest on once, and I was on his show, but Lou was a former policeman. He wrote a book, and he was probably best. His claim to fame is that Starsky and Hutch were based on him and his partner when they were New York City subway cops, and all the adventures and dangerous things that they did back then. Very celebrated cops and robbers team of the Lone Ranger and Tonto. Anyway.
But does Eric Estrada ever call?
Never. Never. But Lou is good friends with Roberto and has had Roberto on his program on WGBB, and so I've heard their show, and Roberto just is so nice and interesting and interested in nostalgia and media, not just weather. Believe I couldn't talk more than 2 minutes about the weather, but give a listen, coming in a couple, well, about 10, 15, 20 minutes to Roberto Tirado, going to be on Dave's Gone By tonight.
Can we ask him about the weather?
Sure. Sure. I mean, ask him, how's the weather? And that should be the ultimate question I should ask. And also, though, we were going to do Inside Broadway. We do this every week, where we give you big Broadway breaking news of what's happening on the stages of New York, sponsored by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway. And so I had a Inside Broadway segment all scheduled because, you know, the Tony Awards announced that the date that they're going to be June 15th out in Radio City, so that's all set up already. And there were other things that were happening in the theater. But then, just yesterday, Marcel Marceau died. And
he passed away. He was a mime.
He passed silently. You know what his last words were?
No one does.
Only he heard them. So, Marcel, I've seen him a couple of times in performance. He was a very great artist. And I don't know very much about mime, except for the fact that I, like everybody else, make fun of it. And yet, I've enjoyed it most of the times I've seen it. In fact, most recently, Billy the Mime, who is absolutely brilliant. He's taking it to another level. He's taking it to a very modern and dark sensibility. If you ever saw the movie The Aristocrats, or he's literally off-Broadway now. I think he's finishing up his run doing his show of all these different short mimes. No, worse than that, I mean, Billy the Mime's mime pieces include things like A Day Called 9/11, what were some of the other... I mean, he really goes into some dark... The death of JFK... the death of John F. Kennedy Jr. He'll go to the darkest, deepest, ugliest topics and make them both funny and a little scary and sometimes beautiful. He's really wonderful. But anyway, if you think mime is just about, well, the typical Marceau image of walking against the wind and that there's nothing to that and it's boring, well, when it's done right, it isn't at all. And it can be pretty spectacular and wonderful, which Marceau, at his best, could be. So, talking about Marceau, is someone who knew him, was kind of friends with him, studied with him, my good friend Richmond Shepherd. So, he was kind of a last-minute addition to the show. I'm going to be very happy to have him. And he'll be on in just a minute or two after we thank our other sponsors, including Hewlett Minuteman Press.
The Copy Kings of Broadway.
Next to...
Laumann's.
Across the street from Laumann's and next door to the new Laumann's shoe store. And also want to thank our sponsors, MortgagesRock.com.
Just because they rock.
They do. Well, it's the place to find out how to either get a mortgage or a loan for other reasons, or you learn the ropes and you help your friends, your family, your neighbors, you help them get loans. You do the paperwork, you get the commission.
You can become, set yourself up in business. You can become your own mortgage broker.
Exactly. And speaking of having a business of your own, how's your business doing, Jeff? Well, what is your business, Jeff?
It's the lurch of businesses.
Well, only because helium is so rare at the moment.
I have it, and they don't even buy my balloon.
Well, Jeff owns operates a balloonatorium. How would you call it? It's a party place. It's a place to call if you're having a bar mitzvah, a bat mitzvah, a christening, a holiday party, a Halloween party, a wedding. If you need balloons and centerpieces, call Fancy Schmancy Balloons at
516-797-3229.
What, the number again, a little more quickly?
516-797-3229.
And remember, yes, Jeff is the guy to go to for balloon, big archways and centerpieces on your tables. But if you're planning a party from scratch, Jeff, of course, can hook you up with a DJ if you need one, with the flower people, with the caterers.
You just give me money and your party will happen.
And it'll happen in a great way. So, Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. We have so much to do, and now let's get to it. Got an ad or two, and then it's Inside Broadway, remembering Marcel Marceau. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. La 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 la, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Inside Broadway, where we normally give you the scoop of all the things that are happening on the stages of New York.
Except someone got scooped.
Yeah, well, someone's getting scoops of earth thrown on him, so that's why, I'm sorry, that was terrible. But we're going to take these 10 minutes and remember the passing of a pretty legendary, major, major figure in the performance world, Marceau.
The greatest mime of all time, I think.
Well, that's what most people think. I don't know if our special guest would agree. He may not. Our guest is Richmond Shepherd, who, as I mentioned before, has done pretty much everything in the theater business, from producing to directing to acting, including mime. He is a master mime, teaches it, and has done it for years and years and years. So, first of all, Richmond, welcome back to Dave's Gone By. How you doing?
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm putting on my radio voice now.
Oh, I like that. So you're a radio person, too.
Ooh, that's very impressive, Richmond.
Actually,
who am I talking to?
This is Jeff.
Jeff Goodman is my co-host in the studio for this episode of Dave's Gone By.
But, of course, Richmond, with that being a loyal listener and all.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because Richmond
I live just out of range. I'm on a barge 3 miles outside of New York City out in the ocean. And
you're in the garbage
barge? Don't get the radio wave.
You have your pirate mine station going out on the barge. But
it's the outlaw station.
And there you go. But actually, Richmond used
to be...
the
inlaw station.
You used to be the theater critic for what...
WNEW Radio.
Yeah.
I was a theater and film critic for a couple of years when WNEW was playing Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and that kind of music.
So, yeah, before the QEW and then the Disney stuff, so that's when...
Well, no, the AM is owned by Bloomberg now.
So they turned it into business. So, yeah. I thought QEW switched to the children's...
No, WNEW AM.
Uh-huh.
Some of the people went over to QEW.
Right.
They changed the name of it from QXR AM.
Oh, QXR, right, okay.
Before
right.
that.
Anyway.
It was 1987 to 89.
Got it. And anyway, even long, long before that, Richmond...
And even at that time, that's not long ago, I was already a grown-up.
Just
But
barely.
Did you know Roberto Tirado? Did you know he did the weather?
Roberto Tirado?
Yeah, but Roberta...
Remember Action News Channel 11?
Did she have a little mole on her right hip?
Then you knew her. Or do you have to page through your Rolodex to figure out, which girl with a mole on her left? Anyway...
But it's a boy!
So, Richmond, let's get to your knowing the late Marcel Marceau. When did you first meet him?
I met him on his very first trip to America.
Mm-hmm.
It's about
53 years ago, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
50 years ago. He was 33 years old when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
He just died at 84. So it's approximately 51 years ago.
And what are your thoughts? Yeah.
Well, I had been doing mime for a few years. I studied with someone who had studied with Marceau's teacher, Etienne Decroux.
You studied with Decroux as well, right?
Yeah, I did later on. I was working for the newspaper show business, writing for them, selling. So I was just out of college and selling advertising for them, and I heard much, and I learned some mime from Alvin Epstein, who is still around.
Yeah,
King Leo last year, and he was one of my first teachers, and so I asked Leo Show, who was the owner of.
Well-remembered Leo Scholl, who owns show business, yes.
I asked him if I could review Marceau Marceau, and I did, and it was one of the early reviews Marceau got.
Hmm.
And I met him, and we chatted, and he said, well, you know, he came down to my studio and watched my little mime troupe do a little something, and he said, why don't you come to Paris? So I said, okay.
Yeah.
1956. And I went to Paris, and I studied with Etienne Decroux.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't study with Marceau. I worked out with him a bit on the stage at the theater where he was preparing a show.
Uh-huh.
And I was friendly with him, but he was very busy doing a show.
Right, okay.
And I studied with the man who taught him, Etienne Decroux.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned from Decroux that what I was doing was okay, which was not Decroux's tangent. It was my own. Which is probably more based on Jean-Louis Barrault, who was the mime who was in the film Children of Paradise, Les Enfants du Paradis.
So, but how would you say your style differed from Marcel's?
I didn't do much one-man stuff.
Oh, okay.
I never did one man chasing a butterfly. Or what he did was, what happens to a man when he rides on a subway, when he goes into a shop, when he...
Right.
Encounters, whatever. I did mime theater with many characters, with costuming, with live music, with theatrical stories. So it was different. It was more like what Barrault did in Children of Paradise.
Okay.
Can you give us an insight into the person that was Marcel Marceau?
Sure. He was
Because, I mean, I saw his show when it was, he was last year, I guess, in the Blasco Theater at the, in like the late 80s or something.
Maybe, I guess he was on Broadway, but he kept coming back to like the Danny Kaye Playhouse.
Yeah, I mean,
later
and
years.
I was, he was just brilliant. I mean, it was breathtaking just to see him work. And I'd love to, you know, and because he never spoke on stage, I just really want to know what this man was all about.
Well, I saw him perform, of course, when he was 33 and up until into his early 80s. I saw him in, I don't know, just a few years ago in Austin, Texas. I saw a show he did. And he did a couple of shows in New York a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he maintained his physical agility. He was always able to create his mime magic on the stage. There's no one alive, or there hasn't been anybody who could do what he does, which is what happens to a man when he, as well as Marceau did.
But
he liked as a person, you couldn't shut him up.
Really?
That's what some of the obituaries say.
He was a very gabby, chatty person. He liked to hold court and talk a lot. Was very, let's say he was very conscious of his status as a world-renowned figure.
Did he talk much?
Didn't hesitate to remind you of it.
Did he talk much about his family and his dad and the Holocaust and all that, or was that?
No, he never did. The first television interview he ever did, I arranged for him in California. Les Crane had a television show.
Yeah.
On the Westinghouse before he went to ABC with the shotgun mic, and Les was a good friend of mine at the time, and I said, "Listen, Marceau's coming to town." He said, "Who?" I said, "Come on, interview him, put him on your show." And I told him a little bit about Marceau, and anyway, he interviewed him, and that was his first appearance on television, and that was the first hint that anybody knew that Marceau was Jewish.
Mangel, I think, wasn't
No one knew his maiden name. No one knew his father. One knew anything about... Well, that's what I call it.
Yeah.
His original name. Nobody knew anything about his history or his family's history. But I had prepped Les, and he said, "Well, I understand that, you know, you're Jewish and that you took part in the underground in France fighting the Nazis." And Marceau, kind of hesitantly at that time, this is a long time ago, said, "Well, yeah, yes, that's true." And a little bit about his family's history came out then.
But he was
first time.
Surprising. He was so...
He was always thought of as French.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only when he became older that he began to discuss at all his family history, relatives dying in Auschwitz and the part he took in the underground.
Yeah, his father had died in Auschwitz. I don't know if I had made that clear.
Yeah,
I have just 1 or 2 minutes left with Richmond Shepherd. Thank you so much for talking to us about Marcel Marceau. The one thing I also wanted to mention to you, and this is kind of interesting, when I would go see Marcel Marceau, I saw him on Broadway, a couple of times off Broadway, and it was great, it was brilliant, it was amazing to watch, but it was always 2.5 hours long. And I was
I said to him every time I saw him, "Marcel, don't do 2.5 hours in America. Do 1.5 hours, 1.75 hours. I'll come and see you again next year." He said, "No, I would have to leave out this and I would leave out..." I said, "Leave it out. I'll come back and see you next year." No. You couldn't tell him what to do or how to do it because he was, after all, Marceau. And he also, I said to him, "Don't do your abstract stuff in the first half. Do it in the second half. Do your comedy stuff in the beginning, so that they'll come back for the second half." But he did it his own way. And ultimately, his audiences got smaller and smaller because you saw him for 2.5 hours. You were not going to come back the next year.
Yeah, that kind of holds you for a few years, 2.5 hours straight of mime. Anyway, Richmond, I want to thank you very, very much.
Anyway, we were all really fond of Marceau.
Good. Was he a nice guy? I mean, aside from the arrogance, was he a nice...
He was very sweet. He was really nice. He had a kind of a naivete about him.
It didn't sound
like
he was.
I was at his 76th birthday party here in New York. He was doing a workshop, and I gave him an imaginary flower. No, we were all quite fond of him. We liked him. There was a kind of a sweetness about him.
I hope he got that imaginary gold brick I left at the stage.
The imaginary wallet. I kind of mailed him at one point.
I think he has transcended that at this
moment. Well, I want to thank you, first of all. We're very, very happy to have you and your memories of Marcel, and for a million other reasons to have Richmond Shepherd on Dave's Gone By. Best of luck. By the way, let's tell everybody, give you a little bit of a plug. Richmond Shepherd is the owner and operator of the Richmond Shepherd Theater on East, is it 17th Street?
On East 26th Street. And I'm going into rehearsal on Tuesday for a play that I will be in.
Ooh.
Opening in about 3 weeks. It's called B.J. Lang Presents Cyrano, about a mad former film director who thinks he's still directing Cyrano. We're timing this to open in conjunction with Kevin Kline opening in Cyrano on Broadway.
Well, everybody go to the Richmond Shepherd Theater to see Richmond himself appearing in that play. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to move on from Inside Broadway. Thank you again, Richmond. We'll be
Anytime.
Back. And coming up, Roberto Tirado. You do need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TobalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Hi, this is Roberto Tirado on Dave's Gone By on WGBB. Dun, 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 dun. Ladies and gentlemen, Pat Harper, Jerry Girard, Steve Bosch, and Roberto Tirado with the weather. This is Action News at 7:30.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Does that bring back some memories for New Yorkers or what? Now, the voice doing that intro was not the voice you would have heard on Channel 11, PIX, during 1977 through 1984, when that was kind of the team doing the news on Channel 11. But certainly one of those names, that weatherman name, you should recognize the voice because he is here with us on Dave's Gone By tonight. Please welcome Roberto Tirado, weatherman. Hey!
All right, Dave. Thank you very much. You're absolutely right. You know, that was called, it was called Action News.
Uh-huh.
And it had a very, very odd little theme that I just did. And there were lots of action news all over the United States, actually, for a while. You know, they had that concept, like eyewitness news concept.
Got it.
You can go in different states and see the eyewitness, too. And they had the music, too.
It was sort of a format-y thing that they would bring, kind of like Jack FM, to
exactly.
In a weird way.
It's kind of an interesting situation because at that time, a guy named John Corporon, who was the news director at that time, wanted to put a team together to replace, are you ready for this?
Sure.
Sally Jesse Raphael, who was the anchor woman, and she was not very happy about this.
Yeah.
And she said, what do you mean they're going to put a news? What do you mean I'm being replaced? You know, because a lot of people don't understand that Sally Jesse Raphael, before she made it really big, was like fired 18 times on television, and then finally she made it as a star.
Huh.
And we were just one of the many people in her way to encumber her success.
I think it was the glasses, actually.
Maybe it was the glasses.
They didn't get hip until the middle of the 1980s. And then people say, oh, the glasses are hip. And then, bam, she went right to the top.
And, of course, God bless Pat Harper. She was beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed, lovely, lovely woman who died a little too early in life.
Yeah.
But she smoked 5 packs of cigarettes a day. And I'm not joking.
I didn't know that.
Mm. It was, she smoked so much, we kept saying, Pat, don't smoke, you know? But she couldn't stop. And that really did her in. And that's really...
She died of lung cancer, I assume.
Yeah. She got very ill.
And unfortunately, I think we lost Jerry Girard about a year ago.
I think, yeah.
Or 2 years, or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was not that old, so that's not...
So, you know, it's funny. Life is strange when you start thinking about that. But there was a moment when we were the best news team. 1977, we were the best news team. Emmy, we got our Emmys.
Yeah.
We got an Emmy for that for the best news team in New York City.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Very cool.
And we got also an Emmy for that the year, I think... When was the big... when all the lights went out in New York. Was that 77?
That was the 77 blackout. With Son of Sam, I think, was a year or two or something like that, yeah.
We were there doing the show. All the lights went up. You know, you had an extra generator at the channel. Don't forget now, Channel 11 News, WPIX, was stationed in the Daily News building on 42nd Street, 2nd Avenue, the Daily News building. That's the building that you saw in Superman with the big globe.
Of course, yes.
Remember the big globe in Superman when he walks in the building? That's WPI, that's the Daily News building.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
or is maybe still the Daily News building, but it's not where PIX is, or WB11 or CP, whatever they call it now.
And I'll never forget, I was walking out, we just finished the show, and then the lights went out. And then we started getting phone calls all over the country, the United States, and I manned the phones. I don't know how many people I talked to, telling them there are no lights in New York. It's the most insane thing I've ever heard of in my life. Meanwhile, the whole building was lit up, the Daily News building, with hundreds of lights, because guess what? They were filming the Superman scene, as you remember, where the helicopter was coming down the side of the building.
Yeah,
remember,
yeah.
Lois Lane fell out of the helicopter, and Superman had to go up and get her.
Uh-huh.
Well, of course, they had about 500 extras out in the street. The lights were all blaring on the building, and surrounding the lights, there was nothing but darkness on both sides of New York.
Oh,
except that one little building lit up for the Superman sequence, the famous helicopter.
Director Richard Lester, I think he did the first one, must have been like, oh, this is the shot, just point the cameras that way, so there's nothing else but this building. That's marvelous. But you guys must have been, I mean, maybe not on the news while it was on, but there was a blackout 10 years earlier. I mean, it wasn't news that New York could lose power.
Yeah.
As we did recently.
But it was strange, because walking that night to a Grand Central Station was very adventurous and frightening. Because you couldn't see anything in front of you. Criminals could have come out of anywhere that night.
Yeah, except they couldn't see either.
But, yeah, since
it's not like criminals have 15 vision. I think they've got the same eyes the rest of us do.
And as a result of that, nobody got hurt because nobody could see each other. It was a wonderful night.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a night unlike the only other night, a day that I can remember is I was doing the weather in 1978.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, now you remember. Now, that night, it was a little chilly. And I went on the air, I talked to the guys that were briefing me, and they said, you know, Roberto, tomorrow could be one of the greatest snowstorms ever. And do you want to go with it, or do you want to just forget about it and just say it's going to be a little snow? I said, no, let's go with it, let's gigantic. So anyway, I go on that night, ladies and gentlemen, it appears that the system is coming down from Canada, and it's going to give us so much snow that it may turn out to be one of the greatest storms of the 20th century. And of course, one guy called me, wanted to come over and beat me up. He actually wanted to come to the studio. How dare you say something like that? The sky is clear. The moon is out. Everything is beautiful. Well, the next day, the snow hit. It shut down the tri-state area. I lived in Connecticut at that time. I couldn't get to the station. The city was locked. Ella Grasso was the governor of Connecticut at that time. I remember all the highways into New York were shut down because it was like a blizzard all night.
Uh-huh.
And the state police of Connecticut took me to New York on one of those little, what do you call those little things that they with the, they look like
a
sleds.
Moped almost, or a,
like a little moped with sleds underneath it.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I know what the names are.
A motorcycle.
Yeah.
With sleds. And they took me all the way to 42nd Street, and I wish I had taken photographs. The city completely stood still that day, and I kept wondering to myself, boy, I wish that guy would call me back, the guy that called me last
night. He never
did
he, huh?
No, he didn't. Some of those adventures of, between the blackout and the big...
You sure it wasn't Stormfield?
Whose name, by the way, is Elliot Field.
And he changed it literally because he was going to be a weatherman like his dad?
I should have called myself Tornado Torado. I would have been even more famous.
Tornado Torado. I think Roberto Torado is just fine. And that's who we have in the studio, by the way. Roberto Torado, the best known as the weathercaster from Channel 11, WPIX, from about 20 to 25, 30 years ago. I got to go for the obvious thing. How did you start being a TV weatherman?
It's very strange, Dave, because I didn't begin this. Lots of people begin their lives in actually different highways, as it were. I was in New Haven.
Uh-huh.
And in New Haven, believe it or not, I was studying with some of the people up at the drama school at Yale. Oh. And I was doing Shakespeare and Molière on stage.
Sure.
I was actually being trained as an actor. And the strangest thing happened. None of us had money.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the guys said, hey, you should go down to the local TV station, WTNH Channel 8 in New Haven, Connecticut, because they're looking for news people. I said, but what do I know about the news? No, just go down there and find out what's going on, because if you can get a job, then you'll have extra money. We don't have to call our parents, and we can get the money for you for pizza or sandwiches when we need it. I said, you know, that's a great idea. We'll just do it for the weekends. Well, anyway, I went down there, and actually I wound up doing a minority programming for Channel 8 with an unknown young lady by the name of Sue Simmons.
Sue Simmons.
Yeah, she was the NBC anchor woman, yeah?
Oh,
many, many
gosh.
Years. And we started out in New Haven. She working with me in New Haven doing local TV in New Haven. And then they needed a weatherman. So they said, well, do you know anything about the weather? I said, no. Now, you understand, this is going way back. And, you know, you didn't need degrees or anything like that.
You don't need them now.
No. Do you know some of the people that were weathermen before they became famous?
Well, David Letterman.
That's very good. You know David Letterman. What's the big star that was a weatherman? And okay, I'll give you him.
Sure.
Merv Griffin saw him doing the weather on TV and said, you know, I've got a new show that I'm going to open called The Wheel of Fortune, and I would want you to come down and test for that. Maybe you don't have to do the weather anymore.
Well Pat Sajak. He seems like he could have been a weatherman. He has that kind of feel.
Sajak. Merv Griffin called the station and got him released.
He
left doing the weather and became the host of that show, Wheel of Fortune. And the rest is history.
A nice entree. And none of these people, by the way, were meteorologists.
No, they weren't.
Well,
Al Roker is not a meteorologist. You know.
There were only a couple who, well, maybe now they all have to be. I don't know how it works.
And even in those days, remember now, Dr. Frank Fields and his son Storm were eye doctors.
Well, I guess they could see farther into fog.
That's it. And of course, they became legends as well. So it was a different time. Anyway, I beat out about 40 guys.
Mm.
And I wound up doing weather on the weekend in New Haven, Connecticut at about 1975. And from there, I think a year and a half later, New York called. I beat out 250 guys.
Wow.
A nationwide search. And just like they say in the movies, the news director called me and says, Roberto, I'm going to make you a star.
Kind of. He did, actually.
At that time, you know, that's what I was. And so I wound up going to New York City and I did the weather. And it was so much fun. And it was a different age. There were no computers.
Right.
Well, we had to throw magnetized on.
Well, I'm thinking there were no Doppler 5000s, but there was not even a wow.
It was to change from one weather set to the other. We had a scenery guy in the back with a winch, you know, and he had to crank on the new map. And one day, I was doing the weather. And we wanted to go from local to a national map, and the crank got stuck midway. So that it actually looked like it was facing you, like, you know, and it was an embarrassing thing in the world. The guy's going like, everybody's laughing, Pat's dying on the floor. And I had to do the weather sideways because I didn't know there was no map to look at.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, they actually had stagehands.
But let me ask you, how did they create maps if they didn't have, I mean, what would they just call 12 different cities and figure, well, it's like that over there, and then kind of create a map out of that?
Yeah, well, don't forget, in those days, they didn't have all the fancy stuff behind you.
Right.
You actually had a map behind you.
Oh, well, no, a map of America. But I'm saying, how would you know, like, how would you guess that there was a low-pressure system building in Denver?
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we were briefed by the meteorologist.
Oh, so there were actual,
started, and this is a wonderful story, by a company called AccuWeather.
Mm-hmm. The AccuWeather forecast.
Yeah, you know these guys, Ken Bowers. A lot of the guys who are here on CBS and the radio are the AccuWeather guys that briefed me for all those years. And they would say, okay, Roberto, there's an area of high pressure over Pennsylvania, and apparently they're very cold there. The jet stream is going to descend to the south of Pennsylvania, bring in cold. And he would explain to you step by step what you were to tell the audience that evening. And then you get briefed, and you would have like a 2 or 3 minute spiel. And that's the way it worked. If it was a hurricane or something very serious, they would brief you every other hour, hour and a half, with new statistics, that you'd write it down.
Well, yeah.
That's what happened. So I said, God, I feel so strange. Here I am. I was doing Shakespeare last year, and yet I'm doing Iago, and this year I'm the weatherman in New York City. How ironic and how weird. So I said, I have to become a little kosher. I got to do something to make myself a real weatherman.
Yeah.
So I waited a couple of years, but in 1980, 79, I actually started in 79, I wrote a weather book, and it was called Roberto Tirado's Weather Book.
Yeah.
And it was reviewed. It was given a very nice review. It's all the great storms from the 15th century to modern time. And it got a very good reviews, and Barnes & Noble handled it. I was at Fifth Avenue signing books at that time at the Fifth Avenue Barnes & Noble for Roberto Tirado's weather book. And it's been selling on Amazon ever since, almost 25 years. So what I want to tell you,
sure,
and any of the listeners that who might remember me and who might be interested in this particular book, I've updated it, the 20-year storm, so I stopped in 1980.
Right, okay.
So from 1980 to 2007, I'm going to cover all the great
problems. Well, Katrina will be in there. And,
oh,
yeah.
That's going to be a big one. And I'm going to update the book, and it's going to be re-released in May of next year, Roberto Tirado's weather book. So I'm announcing it here for the first time on your show. A day's gone by, ladies and gentlemen.
An exclusive. And is it, who is Barnes & Noble the publisher? No, who would be the publisher?
Well, you see, the thing is, I had all the rights, essentially, at the beginning of this. It was a Peregrine Press, and it was a long time ago, and it was out of Connecticut. But now it's going to be done by Celebrity Press. A friend of mine named Richard Grudens, he has written books and books about the great bands and about the great singers. He's sort of the Herodotus of modern music. He's becoming recognized all over the country.
I always thought I was the Herodotus of modern music. I build myself frequently as the Herodotus of modern music, but it just never took. I don't know why.
Yeah. No, Dave, no. Is that right?
No, not at all. But congratulations. No, I mean, I think that's great that you're updating the book and that it's going to be coming out next year. Is it going to be a Christmas book or a little later than that?
I think it's going to be in probably May. So it really doesn't, I don't know what happens in May.
Yeah, there's no weather in May.
There's no weather. But that's essentially what we're going to do. We're going to put it in the bookstores and, Borders and all these places. But it's also going to be online.
Of course.
It should be on Amazon. So remember, if you're interested in the book, it's called Roberto Tirado's Weather Book. And it's kind of a fun book to read. And I hope you enjoy it. And, I'll even sign anything. If you ever send it to me, I'll sign it for you.
Well, that sounds great. Include the postage for return, folks.
Thank you very much. Hi, this is Roberto Tirado, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Now, there was something we were talking about before we got on the air that we still have a little bit of time to do, and that is your, as much as you've been in media for several years now, and you've done TV, and you're in publishing now and all that, there's something that kind of frightens you about where media is going and the total pervasiveness. I think that's what you're scared of everything that's going on. Please explain
hit it very well when you said pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is actually a part and parcel of everyone's existence from the moment they get up to the moment they go to bed. And information is good because we should be an informed society. Unfortunately, the information is so much, and it's a 24 hours with 100 different people giving you information time and time again. And I think that it's just a little too much. People are not able to handle it. I call it the invasion of the privacy of one's day. If you get up early in the morning and you hear the birds going and you watch, at the moment you turn that radio on or turn that TV on, you're going to be hit like with a toxic shock of information that a lot of people don't know subliminally, working subliminally. People say, why do I feel so tired today? Why do my stomach hurts? Why am I feeling depressed? Why am I feeling miserable? And then I think, and I'm not, and I don't believe, by the way, in experts. That's very important. All of this information has done something very bad for the people. Critical inquiry of issues are disappearing, and people are living only by sensationalism and just one-liners that they read in the news, thinking that that is the world and that is the issue at hand. And that's one of the great dangers. When a society loses its ability at critical inquiry, then we have a big problem. And so lots of people live in this world of news. They're getting a lot of information, but they still don't know anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's,
they don't know anything.
WINS, as wonderful as it is, 22 minutes, we give you the world. Do they really? I mean, it's funny. They give us commercials. They give us one-liners, a little paragraph, and then it's on to the next. And it's 5 minutes of sports and weather.
And if a guy gets stabbed on 3rd Avenue and 45th Street, he would now get stabbed that same day on 20 different radio and TV stations for at least 150 times. So how does that work? If you really think carefully, it works in a very quiet way in the back of your mind. Violence, you start being frightened. You start not thinking about, maybe I should carry a weapon, or I should walk down the street and thus and thus and that. and it's really doing so much damage to the people. Also, what's going on in the rest of the world, we're all in one living room now. It used to be that we all lived in our own different worlds.
Hmm.
In Sweden, in France, in Spain, in Germany, in America. If you lived in Colorado, you didn't really care what was going on in Florida 40, 50, 60 years ago. What happens now, because of the immediacy of information, we're all forced to suffer together like in one living room. Just imagine in your mind all these flags of all the different nations, the people holding them, they're all living in one living room with one TV. And that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Actually, there's a house like that in Farmingville. But, you know,
it probably
I don't know
is.
What that means. Well, I mean,
so
there's something to be
problem.
There's something to be said for that, too. I mean, and still there is a regionalism. I think we just had 9/11 a little while ago, again, the 6th anniversary. And, I mean, New Yorkers will feel that, I think, in a way differently than the rest of the country, even though the rest of the country sympathizes and empathizes and cries and lost people. If you're a New Yorker, you're still, you were there, even if there's information overload about it all over the media everywhere else.
Yeah.
So there's still...
Yeah, there is a little bit, but even look at this, what's going on in England between the mother and father and this little girl that disappeared at 4 years of age. And it's front page everywhere. You've got to think of how these people, these masters of persuasiveness, these master psychologists called news directors or editors, and they're masters at knowing how to get an audience, because don't forget, it's all bottom line money.
Well, yeah.
And the more you can make that, look at the New York Post every morning. Who thinks about the New York Post every morning? They come up with the craziest lines, the craziest photographs to get you to get that, spend that 50 cents.
Well, yes, yeah.
And they've got to figure out a way of doing it. But it's no longer news. It's become the world of the Enquirer magazine.
Well no one would point to the New York Post as the bastion of new. I mean, they don't even point to themselves. There's a big story in I think New York Magazine about the New York Post this past week or so about just. I mean, they know what they're doing. They're not stupid people.
Not.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Making zillions of dollars over the New York Post, no question about it. But information, I think, has to be handled more responsibly. Or, if it's not going to be handled responsibly, the people that are watching news all day or listening to news programs all day, detach yourself a little about, you know, read a lot about the issues that you're worried about to get different perspectives and look at it from the point of view of the British, from the British point of view of the news,
mm-hmm.
or from different points of view around the world, rather than just one issue, one guy saying it. Because if we don't think carefully, we can be in big trouble as a population.
Wow. Well, no, actually, that's very cool. Got very serious there for a bit. But very good advice and nice advice from Roberto Tirado. The only bad part is we're out of time. I would love to keep this conversation. Obviously, you're invited back because we've just scratched the surface. We've done the headline. I would love to get under the headline and go swimming with you into the real muck of the story. But alas, we can't. But it's wonderful to have you here in the neighborhood.
Great being here with you. Thank you again for giving me the opportunity to partake with you in these conversations, Dala. And hopefully we will meet soon again.
That would be wonderful. Thank you, Roberto Tirado.
Okay, Dave.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Available on CD, available on your radios every Sunday night at 11. Available at theaterpod.com. Anytime you want, there are 25 vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By that you can listen to on the internet any time of day or night for free at theaterpod.com. And pretty soon you will be able also to see or really hear a few bits of episodes of Dave's Gone By on your television if you're living in Long Island, in most parts of Long Island that get cablevision. Because starting the first week of October, Friday mornings at 7:30 is going to be Dave's Gone By on TV. And no, we're not doing a whole different show or anything like that. We're taking some of the cool bits and some of the not-so-cool bits that we've done over the past 239 episodes of the show, and we're going to be bringing them to television in an audio form. It's mostly going to be just the sound of it with title cards and occasional pictures and things like that. Once in a while, we'll bring the cameras into the studio, and you'll get to see some quote-unquote live action. But it should be interesting. It's kind of like a nice morning thing where you're running around, you're packing the kids' lunches, you're heading off to work. So the sound can be on. You don't actually physically have to watch the screen. You can hear My voice coming at you Friday mornings, 7:30 on Long Island Cablevision. And as long as I got you,
it's another reason for it. Thank God it's Friday.
Yeah, it gets your Friday off. It gets your Shabbos off to a roaring start with bits of Dave's Gone By on your television set, Channel 20 on Cablevision of Woodbury, which is it's the major Cablevision outlet for this whole area. But also want to tell you, as long as I've got you here, to remind you that the same week, 2 days earlier, Wednesday mornings at 7:30, will be the premiere of Shalom Dammit, Rabbi Sol Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour, which I'm proud to be directing, and also I'm doing some of the co-writing on that. Rabbi Sol Solomon, of course, stars. And it's a half hour. It just feels like an hour. It's the rabbi pontificating, or reb-tificating, on all sorts of subjects from the Jewish holidays to whatever happens to be on his mind that week. There'll be interviews. I know he'll be talking about some of the non-Jewish holidays and trying to tell Jews how to get through them and not feel really left out in this culture in times like Halloween and Christmas. It's a really interesting and hopefully enjoyable show for you all. Wednesday mornings, 7:30, Channel 20 on Long Island Cablevision, and that starts not next week, just one more week away, starts October 3rd. Do give it a watch. And for information on all of this stuff, please visit my website, davesgoneby.org. That's D-A-V as in Victor, E-S, goneby.org. davesgoneby.org has information about this radio show, has information about the TV shows, has information about everything you want to know, davesgoneby.org. And before we get to Jeff Goodman's recent visit to Costa Rica that we're going to talk to him about, we want to thank our sponsors again who help us bring all this stuff to you. Jeff, why don't you take that?
Oh, well, I love to talk about Minuteman Press, Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, because they're next to Lohmann's Shoes and across the street from Lohmann's.
That's right.
And they have a brand new color copier.
And what do Dave's Gone By listeners get at Hewlett Minuteman Press?
Anything they want for free.
No. Try again. wrong answer.
87% off?
No. Kind of close. Try 10%.
Oh, 10% off.
Off any job, big or small, 10% off if you say you listen to Dave's Gone By and you go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
And don't lie about that, people.
Well, they wouldn't, because if they know to say the phrase, they would pretty much have to be listening or know my website, davesgoneby.org. 10% off at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Now, speaking of good deals, if you are a Dave's Gone By listener, then you know that Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine.
Half off.
Not quite half off. Nope.
Dave is turning beet red right now.
No, he's just kind of taking your little red thing and turning your microphone off. Just to tell everybody that it's a really, really great deal that they're extending for subscriptions to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Normally, for a subscription of 21 issues per year, it comes in almost twice a month, the price is $275, or I think I even raised it to $280 recently. It's an expensive magazine, but if you're a Dave's Gone By listener, it's only $200 a year.
And
sounds like
it.
A lot, but you know, each issue on the stands is $14 or $15, so you save some money, and it's a good deal, and it's a great journal if you really want to know what's going on Broadway, off Broadway, cabaret, opera, dance.
If you are or want to be a theater professional,
you need Performing Arts
Insider. This is what you need to be reading.
And if you want to have a mortgage or help your friends or family or neighbors get a mortgage, where should you go?
MortgagesRock.com.
MortgagesRock.com.
MortgagesRock.com. MortgagesRock.com.
If you want to know why you should visit MortgagesRock.com, just go to MortgagesRock.com. And
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
It's so true. You can make money getting your friends, your parents, yourself a mortgage, or you can get a mortgage for yourself and save the broker fee.
Exactly. It's all there, MortgagesRock.com. So thanks all our sponsors. Remember, if you have a business or product that you want to sell, you want to be part of this, if you want us to be talking about your stuff and making fun of it, but also telling people for real how to get it and why they would like it, just contact
us. They can't get it for free.
Davesgoneby@AOL.com. Davesgoneby@AOL.com, and your ad could be right here, right now, on this station. You could be listening to your ad next week right
here.
It's
amazing, isn't it?
That's the power of radio. And let's see. All right, I'll save some of the other thank yous because I'm going to leave a few minutes.
You forgot about
who?
Fancy Balloons.
However can I forget about that one? Jeff, what is Fancy Schmancy Balloons?
Oh, it's for all your party needs. And by the way, since we ran the Super Spectacular Special,
yeah,
which was everything half off at Fancy Schmancy Balloons,
yeah,
absolutely no one took advantage of it.
Oh. Maybe you should give 60% off.
Okay, 60% off.
60% off. You're kidding me. No, you're for real on this.
Whoever calls, the first person to call and mention Dave's Gone By will get 60% off.
So what's the number that they should call, like, first thing tomorrow morning to get that deal?
516-797-3229.
Again?
516-797-3229.
And please remember, it's not just like some guy blowing up balloons. These are beautiful archways. They're real decorations for big parties. They're also the centerpieces on the tables where, you know, especially for things like bar mitzvahs and kid things where they want
could
beans.
Plan an entire week's worth of events for you.
Absolutely.
You could plan a symposium.
And the prices are reasonable to begin with. And again, first person to call tomorrow morning at that number, 516-797-3229, get 60% off.
After
10 a.m. Yes, after 10 a.m. Don't be waking Jeff up. Then he'll only give you 4% off. That's a promise. Anyway, okay, I think we've done with the sponsors. I'll save some of the other stuff towards the end.
Did we say hello to your parents before they fall asleep?
Well, Mom's already asleep, but hi, Dad. Love you. As long as we're doing that, hey, big shout-out to my in-laws. It takes a lot for me to break Yom Kippur early. I'm not a particularly observant Jew at all. I've been to the synagogue maybe one time in the past 5 years, and that was because my cousin was getting married, and he was doing an Aliyah thing. But I had to break the fast a couple of hours early last night. Why?
Why?
Because my in-laws celebrated their 40th wedding anniversary. So
they
we all went out to dinner. Well, they couldn't, you know, they couldn't do it that much later. They're not.
They didn't have
young.
To take the early bird.
Well, they did, kind of, for various reasons. I was working here last night. I was at the radio station in the evening. But I want to give a big shout-out to Rosemary and Larry Weil on their 40th wedding anniversary. Mazel tov, mazel tov, mazel tov, 40 more. And love to my wife, Joyce, as long as we're thinking about that.
Did we give a shout-out to all the people at my synagogue?
Yeah, all right.
Yo, Temple Judea, how are you? and hi to Tamerna out there and Ellen.
Okay. Now we have a little time to talk about Jeff in Costa Rica, which I will ask a question. First, your first time there, right? You've never been?
Absolutely.
Yes, my first
Why
time.
Did you choose it? And please don't tell me it was a cheap flight. Was it?
It was a cheap flight.
All right, then the hell with that. What was the first
actually,
thing?
I always wanted to go to Costa Rica because people always tell me it was gorgeous.
Oh.
It's a lot of expatriates living there. It's a big kind of tourist destination. But a lot of fishing. But to tell you the truth, I did get a really good plane fare, and I couldn't figure out why. Turns out I was in the middle of hurricane season.
We were joking about this 2 weeks ago. Jeff chose the time to go to Costa Rica just when, what was it, Eric or Edna or
something,
what was the name of the hurricane that was churning up right in, and it was supposed to put Costa Rica right in its direct path.
No,
Aruba.
It was Honduras, so it was in its direct.
Well, it veered. It ended up, where did it end up hitting? It might have hit Honduras.
It hit the Costa the Honduran border with Mexico, I believe.
Wow. I mean, it was not a big deal.
Honduran and, what's that other little silly country? And
Dominican Republic?
No, that's an island.
Oh, I don't know.
Belize. I think it hit the Belize.
Oh, poor Belize. Oh, Belize. But... So you were very lucky. Did you even get any rain, or did everything?
Oh, we got rain.
Oh yeah.
As a matter of fact, when we went to the volcano, they said it was pouring.
Yeah.
And I want you. Well, it was only raining a little bit, and you have a beautiful drive, although the roads are very thin. And
yeah.
You're in a big tour bus.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all. I didn't want to be tumbling 14 tourists dead tumbling down the mountain in Costa Rica. But we went to the big volcano, the aerial volcano.
Ooh.
And we went to the mineral hot springs. And we went and soaked in giant hot tubs of hot water for hours and hours. And it was raining.
Natural hot spring, like in the ground, not like...
It's literally on the side of the volcano. And the more you went up into the hot springs,
yeah,
you could hear the volcano just, it's just constantly rumbling and erupting.
Wow.
And at night, if it wasn't raining so hard, you could see the constant eruptions because it has, it's a very flat top. So it's not lava spewing down all the time. It's just kind of spewing up and falling down until all this lava is constantly going up there.
So even in a heavy rainstorm, this is kind of stupid of me. I would assume like when it's really raining heavy, it kind of puts all the fire out. But you can't really do that with lava very easily,
no.
I assume.
No.
So that would be worth the trip right there. To go bathing in hot springs under a volcano.
It was fabulous. And you know, it's not the U.S., so it's not the U.S. because there's no safety restrictions on things. So one of the hot springs had this tremendous water slide. I mean, oh, my God, it was like four stories high. And luckily, your big friend Jeff here wasn't too scared to go on it at least twice. But I'll tell you, it took the wind out of me just climbing up all the stairs. And so you go down and had like two bumps. One bump was like, I tried sitting like both times I went down. And it's like you go and you hit the first bump.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, it's a little bump. But you hit the second bump and then you're airborne.
Oh, my God.
And then you just automatically fly back. So it's like, and then you hit it's like you kind of just land very gently on the slide. And then I make the most tremendous splash in the water you ever saw.
Oh, my goodness. Was someone taking pictures? Was someone, you have this on?
No, I don't
uploadable
have
uploadable to YouTube?
No.
Oh.
But
yeah.
I must tell you that the entire, like, area came to a stop when I was there. I'm, like, sitting up there, and there's, like, no less than, like, 50 to 100 people watching, waiting for me to go down this.
I mean, if people don't know, well, first of all, there's a picture of Jeff on my website, davesgoneby.org, but Jeff is a fairly large person. So it is kind of an interesting thing, I guess. I would watch. And perhaps giggle, I'm sorry.
Did you pay?
You know, it's an idea. I might. But that sounds pretty amazing. How was your hotel? Where did you stay?
I stayed at the Trip Corbucci. It was a lovely little hotel. Which reminds me that they had a casino in the hotel, so I actually gambled in Spanish. I'm not exactly sure what game I played, but I did gamble in Spanish.
How did you do?
Not well.
You lost a few pesos? Or
I lost a couple of...
ooh, simoleons?
I forgot what they were.
Yeah,
they didn't stay in my hand very long. But they actually love dollars. What
no, probably
surprise.
Not a good idea to gamble in another language. But, the odds
but
are against you to begin with.
Yeah, I know. But it was so weird. They had, you know, the roulette table?
Yeah.
They don't have the same roulette wheel. It's like a bingo cage thing. It was really weird.
Oh, my God.
They just spin this bingo cage.
It's a very backwards country, so they have a roulette square. It just bumps the four sides. Like twirls, like bang, bang, bang,
and
bang,
Fred
bang.
Fred Flintstone was the croupier.
What worries me, I won't say worries me, but the weird thing is, here you were in such an exotic locale like Costa Rica, and you'd rather talk about Vegas. You're more excited about your trip.
Well, I wasn't in Costa Rica for all that long.
How long? You were like 5 days, weren't you?
Well, you see, you won't let me talk about the travel, and that's where everything got screwed up this trip.
Oh. Is there like a short version?
Yeah.
Well, in other words, you were supposed to be in Costa Rica 5 days, and you were only there like 2.5? Was it that kind of... What? Well, we seem to have a little bit of extra time on this Dave's Gone By overtime, so Jeff Goodman, let her rip. How the heck was your travel so screwed up from New York to Costa Rica?
Let's put it this way. Jeff likes to book a lot of flights. So I had 4 planes to take to Costa Rica.
I warned you about this kind of thing.
But it was not the airline's fault. Well, it was a little bit, but not much.
What happened?
Well, let's see. I started off, my first mistake was I started off in Islip Airport.
Yeah.
And I got to Islip, and my first problem was I'm very concise packer. I write a whole list of what I'm going to pack, and I pack exactly what's on there. I check it all off. And
very good.
Right, yeah. Well, what happens is I got to Islip, not a problem. I got on all through security. The security in Islip is unbelievable, too. They make you walk a mile and a half to get to where you, mm-hmm. which is like 20 feet away from where I started. I had to make this big circle to go past all the Southwest planes to get to my U.S. Air flight.
Okay.
But, anyway, I got on the lovely Islip to Philadelphia Philadelphia flight, which had all of 3 people in it.
Nice.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
They had a wonderful flight attendant. The flight was great. Landed,
I get to Philadelphia. Should have known this. I swear it was like in the movie Airport. The flight to Baltimore will be leaving from gate 3. No, from 43. No,
oh,
from
no.
3.
No.
From 40. It kept going back and forth. So finally, I just told the guy, I stopped. I flagged the guy down with the card. I said, I am not walking anymore. Take me to the gate that it's going to be at. And they called and they
and when you hear, you know, when I think of Islip Airport, I've never been there, but I always remember this tiny little thing.
No, this is in Philadelphia.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Forgive me. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So anyway, I got on the plane from Philadelphia to Baltimore. No problem, right? All of a sudden, you know when you land, you feel that jolt of when the wheels hit ground? As soon as that happened, I went, oh, my God. And people started looking at me. They thought the plane was crashing or something.
Oh God.
But at that exact instance was the moment I realized that I forgot to pack my passport.
Oh, no, no, no.
Yes, 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 David. So, now...
Are you on your list?
I'm in Baltimore. No, I forgot. So, I won't forget that one anymore. So, I'm in Baltimore. And now, big problem. They said, I called up USA and they said, it's not a real big problem.
Really?
I still work with it. Well, it was. But, you know, he calmed me down because I was very upset all night.
Duh.
But they were very nice. And then at 4 o'clock when the people at the front desks, you know, the reservation people.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, when I got into, backtracked into Islip, the only thing the people in Islip said when checking my bag is, wow, 4 stops, I hope your bags get there. I said, great. I said, no, they've gotten there before with 4 hops. I 4 hopped it to Alaska. And everything was fine. But you didn't need a passport. So, you know, it was just because I really went out of Islip. Because if I went out of Kennedy, I would think international airport, passport. It was just, it didn't even dawn on me.
All right.
So I got there, and at 4...
You got to Baltimore.
Yeah, I got to Baltimore. And the people in Baltimore were wonderful. They had told me, they said, oh, well, we were thinking of all these different permutations. I mean, it was unbelievable. And they were really mad because the real rule is that when you're traveling internationally, the person who checks me in at the originating airport has to check your passport to put in information.
Oh, so you were figuring it out by the time you were in Iceland on the line.
It would have saved my whole vacation.
Well, you would have had to go back. You would have missed a day. You would have gone back.
No, because I would have gone back to... I could have gone back to my house.
Yeah.
And then gone to LaGuardia the next day,
flown
to Charlotte, and still it gotten the same flight from Charlotte to...
Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah, all right.
So anyway, I just wanted the 4 things. So anyway, I got there, and the women were very nice. But, you know, it's like they start working at 4 in the morning, and they kind of forget that other people are sleeping. So at 4 in the morning, they're going, well, do you think this? We could get you back to New York. We can fly you into LaGuardia, and you can get on a plane and come right back to Charlotte. And you can make it back to Charlotte in time, but you'd have to get from LaGuardia to your house and back in about an hour, you know, and this is arriving at LaGuardia about 8 o'clock in the morning and getting back or 7 o'clock and getting back around
9.
No, yeah, so it's like
traffic.
Yeah, exactly. So now, that was
no good. Would they do this for free or did you have to pay for the?
No, this was they did this all for free.
Nice.
It was very. I'm telling you, US Air is like the most wonderful airline. And United. I also like United.
Okay.
But US Air was, they were very nice. And, I mean, they basically didn't yell at me for anything. They took all the blame on the Islip people.
Hmm.
You know, because it's the truth, but really.
It was there. I mean, as you said, security was so much on the Islip there. They're like, don't do this. Don't, you got to walk around here. You got to go. The one thing they don't check. Oh, where are you going?
Yeah. They booked my bags there.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was really weird. excuse me.
Well, the thing is, you don't really... They don't care if you have a passport. It's only when you're going into the next country that they actually care.
Yes, but the U.S. Air does, because when you're booking... When you're signing into your originating thing, you have to have all the passport information because it goes on the flight with you to Costa Rica. It's a manifest. So that's why they need that.
Right.
But of course, they didn't. So I went back, and then they said, okay, well... We'll call, they said, do you think you can get someone to go? The first thing was, do you think you can get home and get back and forth to the airport? I called up a million fare companies. There was no way. Then they said, well, let's see if you can get someone, I said I don't think I could get someone to has my key to get my passport and bring it. I said, I don't know about that.
Or give it to a...
Because I called one of my friends, and she wasn't... Yeah. When I landed, I called her. She wasn't awake.
Yeah.
And then I didn't know, and it was still so early in the morning. Then I'm saying, well, maybe if you can get someone... Do you think they can get a flight attendant to meet my friend at the airport, and he'll give him the passport, and that way I don't have to fly back to New York. I can just go on to Charlotte.
Right.
But no flight attendant wanted to take responsibility for holding a passport.
Yeah.
So then, because that could have been on a later flight. But then it was like, okay, we'll ship you back to New York, and if you can get a friend to meet you in New York and give you the passport, blah, blah. So, of course, I called all my friends at 5 in the morning,
right,
which they were so thankful for. And they basically said, no, it was impossible. You're just not thinking when you're in a crisis. So I came back to, they flew me back to New York, which was fine. And I came back home, and I started the next day doing the same thing all over again at Islip.
Oh, you didn't have to repack, so yeah.
No, I didn't have to repack. Well, of course, no. My luggage, by the way, is well on its way to Costa Rica.
Oh.
Because it's just not my carry-on. So now they checked the flight. Oh, this is the other thing.
Yeah.
And they said, you think you have a friend who can overnight it to you? And they were just going to put me up in Baltimore.
Right.
And I said, yeah, maybe. And then she checks. And I said, oh, but we don't fly to Costa Rica every day. So they'd have to put me up in 2 nights in Baltimore. And I said, you know, it's just best. Ship me back to New York. I'll start the whole thing over again. So I saw the next day. I got home. Put my passport
in. You can have a free hotel in Baltimore.
For 2 nights. And said, Hath the Raven nevermore.
Well, no, Baltimore's nice.
I know. But don't stop there,
because,
you know, not that it wouldn't be a possibility again.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so, but I wouldn't have a car and stuff like that. So it was just best that I thought, just let me go home. And I was so embarrassed. You have no idea.
Well, it happened, you know.
Yeah, but you just feel so stupid.
Right.
So then I go home and I wait. Probably was about 36 hours for the recycle. And I go back to Islip with my passport.
Good.
And guess what they don't ask for again?
Well, I think this time you must have told them, you know?
I said, would you like to see my passport? Oh, no, it's not important. Because I didn't check any luggage.
Oh, wow.
So I said, I'm going to Costa Rica. Would you like to see my passport? Nah. I mean, the U.S. air problem is the people at Islip. They're very, very lax.
Okay.
But
terrorists, listen up. Yeah.
Oh, right. So, no, don't even say that. But they're nice. But you know what's really funny is the guy who checked in the baggage was also the guy who like put the baggage on the plane. It was the same guy. And it's like I walked through security. Like took me the hour and a half route.
Yeah.
To get through security, and I see him, and he's like behind the desk. At that count, I'm saying, what? Didn't I just check my bags? It's like one person airlines.
Well, there were three people on the plane the first night.
And the second time, there were only four.
Yeah. All right. So we got back to Baltimore.
So after we landed the pterodactyl.
Yeah.
I flew. We went to Philadelphia, got to Baltimore, watched some bad movies overnight.
Okay. Overnight again?
In Baltimore.
So 2 days have now passed.
It's like this is now the second night. And remember, one night is overnight not sleeping because I forgot my passport.
Right.
The next day I slept a little bit, but I was so embarrassed. Then the next night is overnight again in Baltimore not sleeping.
Oh, God.
But that's fine. I had everything. I boarded my 5 o'clock flight to Charlotte.
Fine.
And when I got to Charlotte, we landed about 6 o'clock in the morning. I said, the flight to San Jose.
San Jose, Costa Rica, yeah.
Is at 11:45 or 11:50. Yeah.
Okay.
So I said I had a good thing. So I'll go to, you know, and I knew that I could use the lounge because I was traveling internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So when I traveled internationally, I got to the lounge and I said, okay, I'll rest. So
I got to the lounge.
And I promptly fell asleep because I haven't been sleeping all these nights. And I had an alarm clock, but I it was new and I said it wrong. And all of a sudden I look and it's 10 minutes before the flight.
Oh, okay.
So I wake up and I go, I just throw everything into my carry-on that was out. And I stop by the front desk of the thing and I said, what gate is Costa Rica at? She goes, it's gate 27, but... Oh, I don't know. I said, call them. I said, I'm on that plane. Oh, I don't know if you'll make it. So she goes, I said, just call them and tell them I'm going to be on that flight. She goes, okay. I ran all the way down. I'm telling you, this was
because this wasn't their fault.
This was my fault. But you know, but it was just because I was exhausted from all this traveling. So I get to the gate, and they said, "Oh, are you Mr. Goodman?" I said, "Yes." "Oh, your flight left 30 seconds ago."
"Oh, no, no, no."
They let it go. The girl never called. The girl from the club at US Airways never called the gate. Says, I went back there and I said, "What happened?" She goes, "They didn't answer the rings." I said, "Didn't you think to, like, hold on, they might be finishing the boarding process?" She goes, "Oh, they didn't answer." It's like, I'm sure she was too busy doing, because those people are really horrible. They're like sitting there, they have nothing to do. Nothing. They check an ID before you come into the club, and they do their nails. I swear, every time I come, there are people doing their nails at the club. But,
I don't believe this.
So, and then I got really lucky, because I'm sitting there talking at the gate. Well, this is before I went back and yelled at the woman in the club. I got really lucky, and the woman goes, "Oh, they forgot all the paperwork for the plane." And I'm going, "Goody, the plane's going to turn around and come back for the paperwork. And then they can, like, slide me in. Well, they called the pilot, and the pilot says, "No, we're going to leave without it. We'll just sit in Costa Rica and make up the paperwork." So they didn't do it. So I got to stay another night in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was lovely. But actually, the best part of Charlotte was that I did get to eat at a lovely restaurant called the Cracker Barrel. The Cracker Barrel has great down-home food. And I went there, and everyone kept telling me, "Oh, you must eat at the Cracker Barrel. You have to eat at the Cracker Barrel." I'm going, "What? What is this?"
Yeah.
And it turns out it is like the most delicious home-style cooking. I mean, it has to be. It's like eating the fat of like 400 meals at once. And I who don't even like meatloaf, the waitress goes, "Order the meatloaf." And I said, "Okay, I'll order the meatloaf." It was unbelievable. But for vegetables, I think macaroni and cheese is a vegetable, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah.
And there was some really crazy stuff that was a I think, like, you know, some sugar-coated apples were a vegetable. It was
sugar-coated ketchup, actually.
It was great, but they were great.
So
I just want you to know, it was so good. First of all, I stayed in the hotel. I day traded. I made a lot of money day trading. Not a lot, but a couple hundred.
Yeah.
And then I went to, and the Cracker Barrel was so good that I woke up an extra hour early to get breakfast there, which was also amazing. They have real maple syrup, so I'm going to go back just to eat at the Cracker Barrel.
The Cracker Barrel, yeah.
And
Costa Rica, I'm going to the Cracker Barrel.
Yeah. So then, but US Air, once again, was lovely to me.
Good.
Not only did they get me a seat on the plane the next day,
first
class. They go, "Oh, we can still upgrade you, don't worry." And I went first class next day to Costa Rica, which was Saturday. So I flew down Saturday. We landed Saturday afternoon. I stayed at the hotel, and now I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get a refund because I paid 5 nights and I'm staying for 2. But we're still working on that now.
Actually, you should have called the hotel first thing.
I did. But, you know, when you pay prepay and stuff, and I did through Priceline, and they were kind of bitchy about that. I wouldn't suggest Priceline again. So anyway, I got to Costa Rica.
How long were you in Costa Rica?
I was Costa Rica from like 1 o'clock on Saturday to about 2 o'clock on Monday. So it was 2 days.
2 days.
But the 2 half days were like coming back from the airport and going to the airport.
Oh, poor Jeff.
I gambled for 2 nights and swam in a volcano.
Well, you know what? The volcano swim sounded like it was worth
it. It was wonderful, and it was like all the, and going through the lovely, lush greenery of Costa Rica was gorgeous. And they have all these cows on hills. They're raising cows on hills. And all I could think of was Bat Boy, where the whole moral of the story was you don't raise cows on hills.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, remember? Because all the cows are dying.
Oh.
And they blame the Bat Boy, and it was because they were raising
cows. They were falling off the hill.
Well, no, they couldn't eat anything. Yeah, they just couldn't. You didn't raise cows on hills.
Well, I'm afraid we have to kind of fall off this hill of an episode of Dave's Gone By, because oh my God, it's 12:25 in the morning. Thanks for hanging with us, everyone.
Thanks for listening to my 25 minutes of
horror. Well, it's a lot better than I thought. That's your best plane story I've heard. I mean, most of the time it's like, well, I went here and I went here. It's like, okay, who cares? This was good.
I didn't tell you the way back yet.
We'll have to save that for next week. Forgot to give a shout out for a couple of people who died this week. Brett Summers. The actress died at 83.
Our favorite Match Game lady.
And, you know, she was separated from Jack Klugman. They never actually divorced. So they stayed friends after all that. And Alice Ghost died as well.
Oh, poor Aunt Gladys or something from Bewitched.
And she won a Tony Award, all sorts of stuff. Anyway,
and
thanks.
She's also on Designing Women. If you
was she really?
Oh, sure.
Alice Ghostly, that
sure,
late?
Sure, sure.
Oh, that was 20 years ago already, wasn't it? Thank you to my wife of almost 10 years, Joyce Weil.
And good luck with that pregnancy, Joyce.
Now stop that. She's not. That's a bad joke, and don't make that joke. In the upcoming weeks on this program, we've got Dave Prager, who's written a book on fecal matters. More about that in the weeks ahead. Instead, we will be back.
What a crappy show that's going to be.
Next Sunday, September 30th, 2007, with the 240th episode of Dave's Gone By.
That will be 20 dozen.
Will it?
Yes.
You're the number person. So I'm really tired.
A dozen is 12.
Yeah, times 20.
10 dozen is 120.
It's 140. Yeah.
No, 240.
I'm tired. Anyway, until next week, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night. Happy Sukkot from your head to your tuchus.
Many lovely flights and gone by.